Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:02 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chair Wright, Representative Carpenter, Representative Johnson, Representative Story, and myself, Chair Shaw. I'd like to remind committee members and those in the audience to silence or turn off your cell phones, if you would, please. The staff that will be assisting us today is Talia Ames with the LIO and Annie Goodenough, who will be celebrating her birthday on Saturday. Just want to wish her happy birthday on the record. Thank you. We have five items on today's agenda. The first three items should go fairly quickly. We'll see how that works. We will first take up and consider committee action on Special Senate Concurrent Resolution 5, followed by House Joint Resolution 13, sponsored by Representative McKay. The committee will then consider adoption of a committee substitute for Senate Bill 12, and committee staff will walk the committee through it and speak to the future consideration of the policy. Lastly, the committee will take public testimony, will consider amendments, and take action on House Bill 245, sponsored by Representative Sadler, followed by Senate Bill 103, sponsored by Senator Dunbar. Any members have any questions before we get started? Okay, seeing none. I'm going to do this right. Senate Special Concurrent Resolution 5. By the Senate Rules Committee, in accordance with Uniform Rule 49A4, is a special concurrent resolution that is employed to consider disapproval of an executive order by the governor. The resolution, by rule, must have a hearing in one standing committee of each body of the legislature prior to consideration and a vote by the full membership of a joint session. Senate Special Concurrent Resolution 5 deals specifically with EO 128, separating the membership of the Board of Directors and the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. This committee's responsibility on the matter is to move the resolution from committee so that the joint resolution may be considered in a joint session. Representative Wright, could I have a motion, please?
Chair Shaw, I move the Senate Concurrent Resolution 5 relating to EO 128, separating the memberships of the boards of the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, be reported from committee with attached zero fiscal notes.
Thank you. Is there any objection?
We'll object for discussion. Do we need to have discussion?
We don't need discussion.
Then I remove my objection.
Thank you. Seeing no further objection, Senate Special Concurrent Resolution 5 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to file a committee report. I'd like to welcome Representative Allard to the committee. Next on the agenda is HJR 13, sponsored by Representative McKay. HJR 13 was introduced to the committee on February 1st. A committee substitute was introduced, making small technical changes, and public testimony was open and closed at that time. An amendment deadline was set, but no amendments were received by my office. I'd like to invite Representative McKay's staff to come forward, if you would, please, and do wrap-up comments. And so if you would, please put yourself on the record and do your follow-up comments.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. HJR 13 is a joint resolution that is encouraging the United States Congress to enact term limits on itself. There is no requirement for what those term limits may look like. And once this resolution is on the books, we'd be one of seven states to do so, with the ultimate intent of getting to a point where enough states have put forward a resolution, and then Congress would hopefully act on that to avoid actually having to call the convention.
Thank you. With that wrap-up, are there any questions from committee members? Representative Story.
Comments,
yes.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, my concern about this amendment is that if you have a convention, it cannot be open for a specific reason only. We can't say we're just going to look at term limits for Congress people. And so I think it's not good to open the Constitution to everything. And I know we've heard about some surveys, but I know Alaskans voted in our state not to open the Constitution just to have a wide open constitution and a constitutional convention here. And I just feel that what this bill hopes to do is just open it for term limits is not available for just a narrow category. And I think people are confused about that, that we can open it for just one thing and we can't. And so I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Thank you, Representative Story. Representative Wright.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chair McKay. And to just respond a little bit to Representative Story's comments, you're correct that there is a little bit of legal gray area because there's never been a constitutional convention under Article 5. So assuming a convention ever were to be held, I'm sure there'd be all sorts of legal implications. And once again, the ultimate goal of this resolution is to get enough states to enact it. The Congress would act and impose term limits. And that's been the general strategy with constitutional convention resolutions, the history of constitutional convention resolutions.
Thank you for that follow-up. Any additional comments or questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree on the constitutional convention being wide open. But some of the states that have passed this have limited their delegates by law and under penalty of law up to felonies for going beyond what they're sent there to do. So if in cases you point two people and two alternates, if someone goes against what the original intent was, they're replaced and subject in some states to criminal charges. So that's how you maintain the single subject. You have to do it within the state, but once you get there, it takes that. So there are ways to limit it. And even though I certainly don't want to open it, but there are ways to limit it. So don't let that be the reason that we don't do or do not support this.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any additional comments? Questions? Representative Story.
Through the chair, in the current resolution, is our current resolution limited in this way that our delegates could only participate if it was on this one narrow topic?
Through the chair, Representative Story, currently no, the resolution does not limit.
Yes. Representative Johnson.
The process, thank you, Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, and I've spent a lot of time being lobbied on this, both sides of the issue is the reason that I have an answer to this. That would come after the Constitutional Convention is called and we nominate delegates. The legislature would put those limits on those delegates. It wouldn't come in the form of a resolution. It would come from the enacting authority to send people. So it's not appropriate to have it in this resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rev. Hollab. Do we have any additional follow-up from Representative McKay's office?
Representative Carter. No, none at this time, Chair Shaw.
Okay. Anything else from committee members? Okay. Representative Wright.
Chair Shaw, I move House State Affairs Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 13, Work Order 33LS0690, Bravo, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. And with comments noted, we will move HJR 13 from committee. We're going to take an at ease to complete the committee work. You object? We have an objection for additional discussion or for vote. We'll call the roll. Would you please call the roll?
No.
Representative Wright?
Yes.
Representative
Carpenter? Yes. Representative Allard? Yeah. Yes. Representative Carrick?
No.
Chair Shaw? Yes. 2 nays, or sorry. 9 yeas, nay. With a vote of 5 yeas and 2 nays, committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 13 passes the committee. Yes. Representative Allen? Okay. We're good. Okay. We're taking it easy to – do you maintain your objection?
No, we're done.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and ease to do the finish up on the opportunity report. I'd like to welcome Representative Carrick to the committee. My apologies for not catching you earlier. Okay. Senate Bill 12, sponsored by Senator Keel, was introduced to the committee late last session. We brought the bill back on March 5th to have a refresher course on the bill and answer committee questions. During that hearing, the bill sponsor pointed out an item that needed some attention. The committee substitute is being offered to begin that conversation. Representative Wright, may I have a motion, please?
Yes, Chair Shaw. I move House State Affairs Committee substitute for Senate Bill 12, Work Order 33LS0162, Hotel, as the committee's working document.
Thank you, Representative Wright. I'm going to object for purposes of explanation of the changes and discussion. And I'll ask Buddy Witt to come forward. If you would, put yourself on the record and help us get through the changes and future considerations.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. For the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Representative Shaw. As was mentioned at the first hearing for this bill, when working with the sponsor's office, the very first thing they let us know when I approached their office was of the issue with the bill that was unintended, and we need to tighten things up on the bill. If I want to walk the committee through three different scenarios with this bill so you can understand why we're going to be taking the action, the chair has asked that we take the action that we are. If the bill were to pass as it is, as currently written before you, it allows individuals who are registered as a sex offender or child kidnapper under AS 1263, it would allow a person on the registry to apply for the address confidentiality program. Now, Department of Public Safety has told me that if this bill were to pass as is and someone was on the register and they were to apply for the address confidentiality program, I mean, the application would be accepted, but DPS, it wouldn't change their process. They would still, because someone is still has to be registered, they will still show the information that they're required to show. Inevitably, there will probably be a court case because the legislature didn't specify their intent on that issue. If the bill were to pass and we weren't having this conversation, there would be a court case and someone would sue because they weren't allowed on it, et cetera. The better approach is to bring the subject up in committee, allow committee members to debate it, decide the way forward on the bill, and for the bill to then pass and those questions be answered. The current CS makes one substantive change, and another minor change. The current CS on first change on page 2, in section 2, page 2, line 27 through page 3, line 8, it adds language with some conforming changes that basically says individuals who are required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper under AS 1263 or similar law in another jurisdiction, they are not eligible for the address confidentiality program. It just cleans it up right there. The other change that it makes is we make a change to the effective date, which is no longer appropriate for the bill. So that's being changed to January 1st, 2025. Next week, when amendments are brought up, the committee will be able to talk about and decide a question, though, and that is, should someone who is on the registry be able to access and participate in this program? And you may think the very first answer is no, but thinking of this scenario might be advantageous as we go into this debate. There could be and probably will be, and maybe there already is, a scenario in which someone who is as a part of their conviction, they have to be on the register. Perhaps they only have a few months left and they are a victim of domestic violence. The committee, legislature, has to decide if you want to create an opportunity for someone who is on the registry, who is a victim of domestic violence, to be able to access the protections that are afforded through the address confidentiality program. Currently in the CS, it basically says no, but there will be an amendment that asks that question for all of you to debate. And I just wanted to set the stage for that for the next committee meeting. But the CS itself simply blocks it and says no, if you're on the registry, you cannot go into the address confidentiality program. And that's what the CS does.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Senator Keel, is there anything you or your staff would like to add to that, if you would? If so, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and add anything else you would like to the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, Senate District B, I'm the sponsor of this legislation. I would just want to thank you and your staff today for addressing this unintended loophole, and I appreciate that the Department of Public Safety brought it to our attention. I look forward to this policy conversation. The important thing is that we move forward knowing what we're doing and doing it very deliberately. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I look forward to the conversation.
Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. Senator Keel, I just wanted to ask, why move the effective date out an extra year? Is that just to allow time for the program to be set up, or was there, what were some of the considerations?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Representative Carrick's question, we brought the bill to this body late last year, and it had a January 1, 24 effective date. This is a conforming change to give the department time to set up a program and get it running so that we don't have an effective date in the past.
Okay, fair enough. As opposed to immediately, just follow up.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Representative Carrick again, yes, the department will need some time to set up regulations. Our conversation at the previous hearing about pathways for folks who don't have a protective order but still need the protection of this program, the department will need a little time to implement it. Much as I'd love to do it yesterday, it just has to be done advisedly and carefully.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Any additional questions from committee members? Representative Carpenter.
This is about the changes or about the underlying legislation?
Either or. Senator Keel's here. I guess we can answer one way or the other between Buddy Witt or Senator Keel.
Senator, thank you for bringing the bill forward. How is the concept of setting up a program within the state different from an individual choosing to use a mail forwarding service that's publicly available to them now? Through a purchase agreement, monthly service, or otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Representative Carpenter's question, there are a couple of differences, the first of which is cost. When someone escapes a violent situation, restarts their life in safety, this program does not have a cost to the individual, and a mail forwarding service would have. The other is that there are things we do that create public records normally that do require our physical addresses. And so this provides the requirement that any of those things that would create a public record use the address confidentiality program address and accept that address so that the physical address of the protected person is confidential.
Any additional questions from committee members? Okay, with that, I will remove my objection. Any additional objections? Seeing none. The committee substitute is adopted by the committee as a working document. So a call for amendments was placed to my office by business of on Monday, the end of business day on Monday, March 11th. If you have any amendments, please draft them and have and with the new work order. And if you need more time, let my office know and we'll work with you to try to give you the additional time needed. We're going to bring this bill back before the committee next Tuesday. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 245. House Bill 245 was given a hearing for initial introduction on February 29th. One amendment was received to my office, sponsored by Representative Carrick. Representative Carrick, would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number one.
Object for purpose of discussions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So amendment number one, I'm hoping will be a friendly amendment to the committee members. When the bill sponsor brought this bill forward, I think it's an excellent idea, allows additional options that are perfectly reasonable for Alaskans when making their dividend selections. I was kind of mulling over the idea of whether the state should take any kind of limiting role in saying that if we're calling it the Pick, Click, Save program, that these selections to savings actually go to savings accounts, whether that be a Roth IRA or another retirement savings or general savings account, and decided that, you know, the autonomy of Alaskans to make those decisions is probably more important than a judgment call of myself or maybe the members of this committee on trying to specify what those savings accounts should be. So amendment number one just simply takes a step back approach and in my mind, tries to preserve the state from potentially assuming liability or risk as a result of individuals choosing to give to a savings program or another account that maybe doesn't have some of the assurances that the intended accounts that the bill sponsor brought up could include, and just adds language that there would be a disclosure essentially when someone is making those selections that they assume the responsibilities of the selections they make. In my mind, this is just a very step-down approach. It's just language that helps the Department of Revenue, the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, and Alaskans also realize that the decisions they're making are their own decisions, and we want to support them making those decisions. I also don't want to see the state assuming liability for somebody potentially putting money in an account that, if it's an investment account, perhaps loses them money, and that's why I brought forth this amendment.
Representative Wright, you maintain your objections?
Chair, sure. I'd like to hear from the sponsor of the bill just to see what their thoughts are on the amendment.
Yep. Would you like to come forward and please put yourself on the record and give us an overview of what you think about the amendment?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dan Sadler, House District 24, Chugach, Eagle River. To the chair, I appreciate the maker of this motion. I do support it as a friendly amendment because many Alaskans, everyone who invests needs to understand that investment carries some risk. And because of the nexus between this and the People's Permanent Fund Dividend, there might accrue some residual, the state's going to take care of me kind of thing. And so I think making it abundantly clear with kind of belt and suspenders that this is your decision to invest your money, the state does not assume any risk, you're on your own bub, I think is appropriate. And I'm assured, you can get her up here, but I'm assured by the representative from the Department of Revenue that would not, the addition of that text would not incur any additional expense. And so I consider it a friendly amendment.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Okay, we have online Genevieve Wutosik from the PFD division. If she's available for questions, if you are in the room, if you have any, we have questions. Representative Allard. And if you put yourself on the record and help me with the pronunciation of your last name.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
For the record, Genevieve Wutosik, director of the PFD division. Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you, and through the chair. Thanks for being here today. So we've had a lot of unintended consequences lately, and I just want to make sure that this friendly amendment wouldn't be an unintended consequence. Can you maybe give us your opinion on it?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Allard. The division is neutral on this amendment, as Representative stated. This will not add a fiscal note to it. We would do like a pop-up box, as we have on other parts of the application, and that way it's just adding a little bit of verbiage, but it's not increasing programming or logic to the application. So it would just be a pop-up box if you selected the investment box that says, through the chair, the application form must notify the applicant that the applicant assumes the risk of investments made under this section. So we can comply with that.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes. Along a little bit different line, I've been wondering if it's been your intention that the PFD is taxed in the year that it's given, or if it just can go into deferred comp. And why I ask it now is if they're making a notification that it assumes the risk of investments, would it also be wise to make an amendment to the amendment and there's tax, this is a taxed investment?
I'll take that through the chair, Representative Story. No, it is not my intent to interpose the state into an individual's tax obligations. It is not my intention that the state be involved in any way in holding money back to cover taxes and so forth. Actually, concomitant with the obligation to accept whatever investment risk is the obligation to pay whatever tax obligation there might be on this, whether it's to apply for your, I guess you have to file the form to claim a tax a contribution to a tax-protected vehicle, that would be on your own obligation, would not be part of this process at all. Likewise, if it was income that you had to pay income tax on, that would be up to you entirely, not the state. You have to make your own calculation.
May I add to that?
Please.
Through the chair, Representative Story. The division does not deal with anything tax-related besides that we issue a 1099 that's mandated by statute by January 31st of each year. So if you received a 2023 dividend in 2023, by January 31st of 2024, we will have sent you or emailed you a copy of your 1099. That is the PFD's role as far as any tax implications.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Good to see you again. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, there is, if I'm remembering on the PFD form, if you don't submit your Social Security number, that the PFD will withhold taxes.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, thank you for the warm welcome. Good to be back always. Yes, there's a 24% withholding fee if you put all zeros or, you know, if it's incorrect in any way. You do have until we pay you to correct that, and we'll send you warning letters. Otherwise, through the IRS, they take 24%, so they withhold it. You can get it back, but that would be through them then, because then they have the payment.
Well, the other question, and I'm a little fuzzy on where the investment goes. If you decide to invest in a tax-free implement, does that still make the PFD taxable, or are you double taxed once you cash it out? Or I'm just kind of curious about how that works, because I know you pay tax on the PFD, but if you invest in a tax-free document, municipal bond or something like that, where is the tax when you take it out? And if it's tax-free, you don't? Or is the permanent fund still going to be taxable?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that'd be a question better for the IRS or a tax professional. We issue a 1099 no matter where it goes. Right now, an individual can put their PFD in a checking, savings, or investment account. We already have Alaskans that do that. This is just adding that box that says or investment account. So it's up to that Alaskan to work with their tax professional on when it is taxed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just maybe a comment. I just want to have Alaskans to pay a double tax. So tax a PFD and then tax the other side of it on the other side. So I would like some clarification on that if we're going to hear this again. But my tax professional is my wife. And thank you.
Mr. Representative Sadler.
If I may put on the record, it is not my intention to expose Alaskans to any kind of double taxation on the dividend, just for the record, for posterity.
We appreciate that. We love taxes up here. Any additional questions from committee members? Okay, seeing none. Representative Wright, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Thank you. With no further objection or discussion, Amendment 1 is adopted. Now we're going to open to public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Representative Sadler, would you like to make any wrap-up comments, or is there anything that you'd like to follow up on with the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Sadler, House District 14. Actually, Mr. Chairman, in consultation with Ms. Matujic a little earlier today, she did raise one more issue that may be appropriate to have a small conceptual amendment to this legislation. I'm not sure if I can provide it or I'd suggest it. And if you'd allow me to raise the issue and explain it, that might show a path forward.
Okay, if you'd like, please, Thank you. Got it there at hand.
Yes, sir. Well, the issue at hand is that right now the programming system that the Department of Revenue uses for permanent fund dividends would require, the language of the bill says, allow a person receiving a dividend to place all or a portion of. And I'm told that the program, it would require additional programming to the tune of about $100,000 to have the flexibility to go from 0 to 100% of the dividend. Therefore, I would suggest a conceptual amendment that would delete the opportunity to have a partial dividend and make it, you can put your entire dividend. And if I could voice the conceptual amendment, it might make it real clear. It would be on page 1 of the bill, line 7 of the bill. At the end, the proposal would be a conceptual amendment to delete the words all or part of the amount of, such that the sentence would then read, an applicant for a dividend who is eligible or the applicant's authority of representative may direct that the dividend payment be deposited in an investment account identified by the applicant. Basically, it's going to be all or nothing. In this case, if you don't want to do nothing, you wouldn't check any box. But if you want to put it all in the investment account, you check that box. So that's the issue.
Sadler, are there any questions on the conceptual amendment? Brief at ease. On the record, Representative Carpenter, if you would please.
I move conceptual amendment number one, page one, line seven, delete the words all or part of the amount of. And I further request we authorize legislative legal to make any conforming changes necessary.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. No objection. Any additional comments to that? Okay, thank you. We will move without objection. Conceptual amendment one to amendment one passes. I'm taking at ease. Conceptual amendment one passes the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Public testimony. Is there any public testimony would like to be presented? Seeing none. Representative Sadler, any additional comments?
No, thank you. I appreciate the consideration and the modification making what I hope is a good bill, a little bit better. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Wright.
Chair Shaw, I move House Bill 245, Work Order 33, LS-1136 Alpha, as amended from the House State Affairs Committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Thank you. Without objection, House Bill 245 moves committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we complete the committee report. Okay, we're back on the record. Senate Bill 103 was given a hearing for an initial introduction on February 29th. Committee members were introduced to the policy and heard from invited testimony. One amendment was received by my office, sponsored by Representative Story. Representative Story, would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number one.
Objection for purpose of discussion.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. Based on our discussion last time on this, having a counselor, it was clear that it was a peer counseling program, and there's a difference between a regular counselor and their credentials and what a peer counselor has. And so what this amendment does is it makes clear that this is a peer support counselor, and it adds those words there because the idea is we want the individual to know that it is not a counselor. Full license counselor.
Thank you. Questions for discussion, please. Representative Allard.
Thank you, Chair. I have a little bit of concern about putting peer counselor in front of it. I already know it's in the title. It's already in section 18.95030, page 2, line 2. I'm worried it could zero in if they wanted to use it as a counselor, but I see it already in here, so I'm not. I already see peer counselor everywhere in here, so I'm not supporting the amendment. Thank you.
Any other, Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that my office also prepared this amendment, and I'm glad Rep. Story is offering it. And when we talked with Ledge Legal a little bit, one of the other things that this amendment helps clear up is the fact that counselor is referred to elsewhere in statute, and where it's referred to, it's referring to licensed professional counselors, and they have, you know, a board and professional licensing and other requirements. So I think there's the component that Rep. Story mentioned, and there's also just a clearness in statute that I think this helps to establish, which is to say nothing of the incredible value that peer support counselors have. Just additional thoughts.
Thank you, Representative Carrick. Looks like we're going. Any additional questions or comments? Right. Okay. Representative Wright, do you maintain your? I'm sorry, Representative Story.
Yes, I was wondering if we could hear from the bill sponsor about this.
Please come forward and put yourself on the record and answer any questions or do a follow up.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. For the record, my name is James Holzenberg, staff to Senator Dunbar. The senator passes along his apologies. He is not here today because he is in Anchorage for National Guard service. So I'll be here to field any questions the committee might have. And as to the amendment, we view it as a friendly amendment if it helps clarify the intent of the bill and also helps us avoid ruffling the feathers of licensed professional counselors and other mental health professionals in our state. We're all for it. So thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Any additional comments from committee members? Representative Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question is actually to the sponsor of the amendment. Did you speak with professional counselors, have that conversation with them? Did they support this?
Thank you, through the chair, for that question. I did not. I just looked at the definitions and wanted to make sure it was clear that a person didn't think that they were being served by a counselor who had the full credentials. Thank you.
Any additional comments, questions from the committee members? Representative Wright, do you maintain your objection?
I do.
We'll call for a vote.
Representative
C. Johnson? Pass.
Representative Allard?
No.
Representative Carrick?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Wright?
Pass.
Representative Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Wright?
No.
Chair Shaw?
Yes.
With five yeas, two nays.
And with five yeas and two nays, Amendment 1 passes. Seeing no further objection, Amendment 1 has been adopted. At this time, I'd like to open for public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to provide testimony? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. As the bill sponsor, would you like to do any follow-up or any wrap-up on the bill? Brief at ease. I see that we have three individuals online that would like to testify. We'll start with Brian Webb. Open public testimony.
Yes, thank you.
Brian Webb, could you put yourself on the record and provide your testimony, please?
Yes, and to the chairs and members of the committee, I'm Brian Webb from Anchorage. I'm a paramedic. I'm representing myself, and I've also been a peer counselor since 1989. And we all know that peer support programs are functioning in emergency services. I don't think that's a question, but there's that nagging concern that what we say seems to make its way back to management. And so with SB 103, it's the confidentiality piece that's really important to us. And while at emergency services organizations, both here and in the lower 48, I've seen the peer confidentiality issues occur. And it's not just limited to EMS and law enforcement. When working offshore and in the oil fields as a medic and safety officer, again, the same's occurred. And while in the National Guard, I assisted with debrief process of the recovery crews from our plane crash near Juneau. The results, well, it was 100% of what we said made it back to leadership. There were plum jobs, schools, as well as promotions, which were then denied for several soldiers and airmen. And when in Afghanistan on medical and security contracts, the same story replayed. After the huge attack on Camp Ashton and Camp Leatherneck in the Helmand, contractors were sent home with notes in their personal jackets about being defective or broke and do not deploy. And in the last 2 years, we've lost two Alaska EMS clinicians to suicide, and one was a former partner. We had several discussions about debriefings in his absence from them, and his response always was, because I like my job. And 8 months later, I was attending his wake. My point is, the peer confidentiality issue is real, and not just for Alaska. The fear and mental anguish of ruining our careers is also real. That's a barrier to healing. The bill does a lot to put this issue to rest with the confidentiality piece that's been mentioned. So I ask you to consider protecting those who protect our state and to please move this bill forward. And thanks for listening.
Thank you, Brian. Good to hear from you. Knowing that you've been around the block twice, we do appreciate that testimony. Let's go on to Dean Bruce, Anchorage Fire Department. You'd like to put yourself on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Shaw. I want to thank Representative Dunbar and James Holmberg for inviting me to testify today. My name is Dean Bruce. I'm a senior captain with the Anchorage Fire Department for 24 years. More importantly, I've been the department peer support coordinator for 6 years. What I want to talk to you about today is the cost saving that peer support programs can provide the citizens of our communities in Alaska. In my time as a coordinator for the program, we've had over 15 firefighters attend the Center for Excellence, a mental health and addiction program that has helped our members return to full duty and achieve post-traumatic growth. If no peer support program existed during this time, it is probable that all 15 members could have left the department either for being fired or leaving due to a mental health issue or substance abuse. The replacement for these personnel takes 6 months to a year based on the experienced members of the candidates. 15 firefighters at $85,000 for the academy plus $80,000 in wages during the first year of probation. For those of you that don't know, probation is a period that the candidate is not fully recognized as a full-fledged firefighter, largely due to inexperience. Not having to replace our experienced personnel generated the savings for the Anchorage Fire Department of $2,475,000 in the last 6 years, or $412,500 a year to the Anchorage Fire Department. These numbers do not reflect the people that have obtained aid and have been diverted from crisis or near crisis. The confidentiality piece in Senate Bill 103 will encourage members to come forward and get the aid that they desperately need to return to duty. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dean. We appreciate that subject matter expertise. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Captain. I have a question. Are you a mandatory reporter?
That is an excellent question. Yes, all first responders are mandatory reporters. And so mandatory reporting, we would not be able to then, we'd have to break confidentiality in that case.
Okay, and that was my question. This doesn't protect you or give you relief from being a mandatory reporter.
Absolutely not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Angie Savalto with APDEA. You're online if you'd like to introduce yourself and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. I'm Angie Salvato, and just for clarification, I retired from the Anchorage Police Department just about 4 weeks ago after 22 years. And so although I am no longer a member of APDEA, I did talk to their president today, and he supports this, and they continue to support this. But I just want to thank you all for the support of this bill over the years and hearing me testify many times just from the perspective of police officers. And I was involved in an officer-involved shooting in 2012 where I was immediately a criminal suspect. And it just changes your world a bit going from a first responder to a criminal defendant. And being told by everyone I talked to that I wasn't allowed to talk to anyone about this for 2 years besides clergy, spouse, or a licensed professional counselor. This is just is a drop in the bucket to change the stigma around law enforcement for mental health and wellness, not just mental health, but total wellness for our first responders, both police and fire employees. And I just thank you for your ongoing support. I haven't heard any pushback on this bill, so I will keep it short. And again, I hope that you are all prepared for personally for me to come back to you over the years to increase funding for first responder wellness and a lot more bills like this to reduce the stigma around sex so we can continue to protect Alaska as well as protect those people, those helpers who help our helpers. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sabato. Thank you all for your very poignant testimony on this today. We do appreciate it. Are there any additional comments or questions from any committee members that anyone would like to make on the bill? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things, actually one. I would like to hear from the sponsor about the mandatory reporting. We heard from someone who is not involved, who I believe, but I'd like to make sure on record that this doesn't exempt someone from mandatory reporting.
Thank you. Mr. Holzenberg, can you follow up on that? We also see, he's our subject matter expert in the room.
Please. Through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative Johnson. There are carve-outs that basically spell out that you are not protected when you make threats of help of harm to yourself or others, information that's covered by already established mandatory reporting laws, any admissions of criminal conduct, information on abuse of vulnerable adults or children, or information that has been acquired during the regular course of employment in these peer counseling sessions. That is my understanding of the bill. And if Angie Salvato of the APDEA wants to add anything, I also welcome that as well. But thank you.
Would any of the three of you, or if you're still online, like to take that question on or repeat the question?
Yeah, I can speak to that. This is Angie Salvato through the chair. Thank you for the question. It's an important one. And in fact, we had a lot of questions when the bill was going through the other side of the legislature about this and surrounding this. This language I found for this bill from Washington and Oregon. They have a very similar bill, and Ledge Legal helped incorporate that into what you see in front of you today. It does exempt, these peer counselors from confidentiality surrounding intent, speaking with people who intend to hurt themselves or others, which are the mandatory reporting duties, but also a carve out for criminal activity, which we've had some questions. Does this bill go far enough for confidentiality? Because that is actually less confidentiality than a spouse, a chaplain, or a counselor. That is true, but it still, of course, does not allow them to withhold any information to protect the officer, the employee who is reporting intent to harm themselves or others, or any kind of abuses of children or other things that are covered under mandatory reporting laws.
Thank you, Ms. Walter. You have a follow-up with that, Representative Johnson?
Thank you. And you said withhold. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said withhold, but mandatory reporting doesn't mean you don't have to say something. It means you have to report. So withholding and reporting are two different things. So would you clarify that if you see something that you have to mandatory report, or hear of something you have to mandatory report, you're still compelled to report that under the mandatory reporting requirements?
Ms. Savalto?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry if I misspoke. I intended the same meaning. We're mandatory reporters, so this would not protect any speech that was required within our jobs to be a mandatory reporter and to report anything where someone was a danger to themselves or others, or they're reporting any criminal activity or danger to, children or vulnerable adults.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Does that answer your question, or do you have a follow-up concern?
I have a concern because we're not dealing with legal professionals. So I think that Department of Law is probably not online.
No.
Okay. So I would like to hear it from, not that I distrust anyone, I trust lawyers least.
I'm going to take a brief at ease. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that our legal folks are not available right at the moment. I'd like to ask the question for the record, and so it's recorded. They can answer it at a later date. So the section here on page 2, I'm looking at subsection B. So this is of AS 1895030. Subsection B, talking about oral written information. And this is records and information collected through the peer support counseling program are not subject to discovery or subpoena in connection with a civil or criminal proceeding. And then it gives a couple exclusions for what information it wouldn't apply to. So the question I have is, does this include grand jury proceedings? And that would be a technical question for probably Department of Law or our own legislative legal.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Any additional questions? And without any, we've still got a couple questions on the bill, so we're going to hold this bill over. Hopefully we'll get to it on Monday and take it from there and pass it out. Any additional comments from committee members on anything? Seeing none. No other business before the committee. We are adjourned at 4:11 p.m.